So when they're coming into church, that person is coming in with that whole background with them. They're carrying their culture, and they're also carrying whatever trauma they may have experienced, you know, being a minority. They're bringing that with them into that church space. For example, mm-hmm. you specifically mentioned church.
Welcome to the Guilt, Grace, Gratitude podcast, a show devoted to bridging the gap to the historic Reformed Christian faith. Listen in as two friends, a layman Nick and a pastor Peter, discuss the newest and best books in the broader Christian tradition with some of the most respected seminary and college professors, pastors, theologians, authors, and more. We hope these book club episodes introduce solid theological works to those who want to read but don't know where to start or who to trust. You'll be introduced to authors you know and many others you don't from various theological traditions, but all under the broader tent of our shared creedal tradition. All of these authors and books help us to do the same thing. They remind us of how the finished work of Jesus Christ changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by the Davenant Institute's educational arm, Davenant Hall. Interested in dipping your toes at Davenant Hall this upcoming Trinity term? From April 8th to June 15th. Registration closes March 29th. Here's a taste at the courses. 1st and 2nd Corinthians with Joshua Shaw. The Mercy of God in Scripture and Tradition with Ryan Hurd. Male and Female in Modernity with Alistair Roberts. Introduction to Syriac and Arabic Theology with Charles Carman. Philosophy as a Way of Life with Joe Minich. Aristotle Seminar 1, Ethics and Metaphysics with Tim Jacobs. Early Christian Worship, Ritual, and Space in the Ancient Church with Matthew Hoskin. Reformation of the Modern World with Michael Lynch. Christian Epic and Old English Literature with Anthony Cirilla. Moral Theology for Counseling with Jim Pachta. Anglican Polity with Nathaniel Keane. And Philosophy of Law with Colin Redemer. GGG listeners who are first-time Davenant Hall students get a $25 discount on auditing any of their Trinity term courses from April 8th to June 15th. Registration closes March 29th with code GGGTrinity24, which is in our show notes. Go to www.davenanthall.com to sign up. Hey, this is Peter Bell, and I am in the beautiful wine country of Central Coast, California, in Santa Maria, north end of Santa Maria, in Santa Barbara County. I serve Redeemer OPC, Redeemer Orthodox Presbyterian Church, on the north end of Santa Maria. We meet at Temple Bethel, which is right there, Temple Bethel, at 11 a.m. for Sunday service, and 9:45 a.m., so just before that, for Sunday school. For all ages, we have Kids Sunday School, Adult Sunday School, or all Sunday school at 9:45. You can find us at discoverredeemer.org with one R. Again, discoverredeemer.org. We have a bunch of activities throughout the week. But most importantly, Sunday, we have the gospel preach, the sacraments administered, and church discipline faithfully brought out. So I hope to see you here at Redeemer OPC in Santa Maria, Central Coast, wine country of Santa Barbara. Hope to see you.
Hey everybody, this is Pastor Danny Hyde from the Oceanside United Reformed Church. I want to invite you out to our church. We meet in sunny Southern California, here in San Diego, and we meet at the Army Navy Academy in Carlsbad, right along the ocean, as you can see, the Pacific. And we meet every Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning. We hear the Word of God, we hear the Gospel preach, we have the Lord's Supper every Sunday morning, and then we have Sunday school at about noon for kids. We come again together at 5 o'clock every night, Sunday night, for teaching, prayer, and singing. And then we also have various midweek groups, Bible studies, men's, women's, and also other Bible studies as well throughout the week. So I want to invite you out to worship with us. If you know anybody in the area here in North County of San Diego, invite them as well. Let them know. You can find out more about us on our website, oceansideurc.org, or also on all those various social media. You'll find us as well. God bless.
Hey, this is Peter, one of the co-hosts. We're doing something new. All ads will be fronted before the episode for unimpeded listening pleasure. A quick plug for our show, Guilt, Grace, Gratitude. Would you consider giving to our show? We are a 501c3 nonprofit, so your donations are now tax deductible. We've got two options to give. One, email us at guiltgracepod@gmail.com if you'd like to send a check or use our direct donor link. Or two, go to our show notes and click on our donor box link to give a recurring donation or a one-time gift. You can also click on our Patreon account in the show notes and sign up for monthly exclusives, merchandise, coupon codes with publishers we work with, giveaways for our subscribers, and much more. All donations we're gifted are used exclusively to pursue our mission to bridge the gap to reform Christian theology. Would you join us? Now, on to the show. Hello, welcome to the Guilt, Grace, Gratitude podcast, where we bridge the gap to reform Christian theology. And as my esteemed co-host, Nick Fulweiler, who's not here today, likes to say, it's another day of fresh grace and mercy. And as you all know, or if you're new, you get to learn right now, this is our book club episode. So every Thursday, we have a book club episode with one of the various publishers that we work with and their authors, either repeat guests who come on or new guests, like today's new guest. It's Prasanta Verma, and she is coming to us to talk about her book, Beyond Ethnic Loneliness, The Pain of Marginalization and the Path to Belonging, which is published by IVP. We've had a bunch of IVP books on our show before, and we were very excited to talk about this book with Prasanta on the show as well. So some show notes, you'll find a link to this book in our show notes. So click on whatever podcasting app that you're on, go to the show notes, click this book, buy one for yourself, buy one for your friend, your pastor, book group, whatever it is. I highly, highly encourage those, every book, and especially this one, because Prasanta is a poet too, and she writes really pleasingly. It's a really good read, but also really good content as well. So I very much encourage people to pick this up for themselves or for their friends. And also beyond this too, you'll find information on our show. Our website is guiltgracepod.com. You can find our new shop, which is there too. Our confessionalpods.com, which is a network that we started with a few other confessional podcasts that kind of span the Reformed and Presbyterian and Baptist and other confessional denominational landscapes. If you want to hear from that too, confessionalpods.com. We're also a 501c3 nonprofit, so we want to make sure we let you guys know about that too. Any donations that you guys donate to us is tax deductible at the end of the year, and so we can give you documentation for that as well. We have our shops, so you can buy some merchandise from that too. And also our NAPARC's North American Presbyterian Reformed Council. NAPARC, which is kind of the umbrella of about 10 Reformed and Presbyterian denominations. There's a zip code on there. So if you type in your zip code, you can find the closest church near you, because number one thing is we want to drive people to the church on this show to hear a good doctrine each and every week. And maybe you'll hear something that is similar to what you hear on our show as well, and our YouTube. So all of these conversations, if you're not a big audio person, I'm actually a little bit more of a YouTube person myself, which has been changing a little bit more over the last few weeks and months. But these are automatically uploaded to our YouTube channel, so Guilt Grace Podcast or Guilt Grace Gratitude Podcast, and you can find our YouTube. But I think that's enough of all of our show notes. It's my pleasure to introduce to our audience Prasanta Verma. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Of course. Thank you for waiting for 3 minutes for me to get through all the show notes so we can start the conversation. So let our audience get to know Prasanta Verma. If they haven't heard you before, maybe they haven't seen your Substack, which has got a few thousand subscribers, which is awesome. So let our audience get to know Prasanta Verma beyond her IVP bio. Who's Prasanta?
Well, that's a great question. So Prasanta, I'm a writer and a poet, as you also mentioned. I was actually, I was born in India and I grew up in the United States. I grew up in the rural South in Alabama. Mm-hmm. So I'm part sort of Southern, but I've also spent a good bit of my life in the Midwest. So I'm also,
oh, that's right. Yep.
So I kind of have both identities in my background, and I claim both of them. And I love to take walks, to be outside in nature, and I love to take pictures when I'm outside. So I'm very much an amateur photographer.
I've seen your pictures.
Oh, you have. And so I think one surprising thing about me that maybe a lot of people don't know is that I used to dabble in theater. And so I was in college, and as an adult, I did some theater. So community theater and then theater in college. So yeah, fun times.
Heck yeah. And according to your bio, too, you've got your master's in public health and your master's in business administration, which I think sometimes might seem like two opposing things, but why'd you get those degrees and how do you use them? What was the thought behind those?
Yeah, so well, I got my master's in public health first because I was actually at once upon a time considering a career in medicine. So while I was contemplating that vocation, I was getting my master's in public health. And at that time it was a newer field, and I was really interested in learning, and I felt like it would be a good complement to my future in medicine. Ended up not going in medicine. And then I also wanted to work. I was started to work at a hospital, and I wanted to learn more of the business side of things. And so that's what led to my business degree.
Heck yeah. And you're also into poetry too. So talk to your essays and poetry because you've written for Sojourners, Propel Woman, Barron Magazine, Indianapolis Review, a bunch of different stuff. So talk to our listeners a little bit about your poetic pursuits.
Yeah. Thank you for asking about that. So I've been a writer all my life, pretty much since I was about seven, I
Okay.
think, was when I wrote my first poem.
Huh.
And I kind of joke that
Do you
maybe I
still
was.
have that first poem?
I do. I do. It's very embarrassing.
Oh,
It's
yeah, yep.
very, very embarrassing. So it's like, birthdays are fun. Presents weigh a ton. That's the kind of
I
poem
like it. Yeah, you're still rhyming.
that's
That's good.
how it
Yep.
started. So I think I was writing poems before I could barely even write much else, which is weird. But I think I've just always had an affinity for poetry. And then when I was in high school, actually, I had a teacher reach out to me, and she approached me one day, and she said, "Would you like to write for our school's literary magazine?" And I have to admit, I didn't know what the school's literary magazine was. I
Sure,
didn't even
yeah.
know what a literary magazine was. I didn't even know our school had one. But I said to her, she told me people write poems and essays, they submit art. And when she said that to me, I immediately said yes, because for some reason, something just spoke to me at that moment when she said that to me. And I have to give her credit for making that come alive in me, because she called it out and she asked me in it, and I think that started my journey.
Yeah, no, that's great. 'Cause I mean, I'll talk about this during the interview too, but each and every chapter ends with like a, I don't know, 20 line poem ish, something like that. And they're beautifully done. So that's people can read those and enjoy those. So if you have to, I hate asking, 'cause I would hate answering this question. What's your favorite poet? But what poet do you like? Who do you gravitate to most? Like who if you see their name on the top of a poem, you're like, yes, I get to read this person again.
Oh yeah, there's so many. I would say I really love Mary Oliver.
Okay.
I go to Mary Oliver quite often. I like Ada Limon. I love her stuff. I really love Naomi Shihab Nye. She's one of my favorites. And what I'm reading right now, I'm reading Christian Wiman,
Okay.
and so he's just beautiful writing. So those are some things that those I see those names and I'm
Yeah.
like, yes, I'm gonna read that.
I like it. Yeah. I was way behind the curve. I did not get a great, like, undergraduate education nor a good high school education. I never read T.S. Eliot, and I finally went through his four quartets, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is different writing than I've ever experienced in my entire life before this. So it's gave me
That's
an
so.
appreciation for poetry, for sure. So, first substantive question. People are like, get on with the book. So we'll get on with the book. So what's the background behind this book, Beyond Ethnic Loneliness and the Desire to Write It? And then attached to that, can you define what you mean after you talk about the background by ethnic loneliness?
Sure. So when I was thinking about this book and writing this book, this idea that was coming to me, it was based on my own life experience. And my own life experience, even though I couldn't have defined it at the time, but what I was going through. And I would say over the past 10 years, I experienced a greater transformation and a realization of some of the things I had gone through that I hadn't actually named, but were part of my experience of, and that when I talk about my experience, I mean my experience in appreciating and naming my ethnic identity. So that's kind of the background of where this started. And the other piece of it was that, we talked earlier about the public health background. So I was looking at this from a public health lens also, because the Surgeon General a few years ago declared loneliness as an epidemic. And so we have this epidemic of loneliness in our society already. We are isolated, we are disconnected more and more from each other. And I was thinking about that also in terms of ethnic minority groups. And what does that mean for an ethnic minority? Like, what are the other layers that we can unpack and talk about when it comes to loneliness and belonging to a minority group?
Yeah, it was I don't know if it's a funny joke, but it was a joke 2 years ago. So we were talking before recording. I live in Santa Ana, which, if anybody knows the Orange County, California area, it's like kind of known mockingly, but more jokingly, and it's by residents, it's like the Little Mexico, because it's 92% Hispanic. And it was one place, and my wife's Hispanic, her whole family is obviously Hispanic. It was the one place where her uncle joked, like, I actually added the diversity when I walked into Santa Ana for the first time, which now it's like reading your book, it's like, I know generally white people are not the minority, but it was like the only place where I was like, I kind of feel a little bit, in the tiniest little smidge, what it's like to be the only white person in the midst of a lot of Mexicans. Even though it's not the same thing, of course I know, but it was a little bit of a taste to see, like, oh yeah. Every grocery store I walk into, I'm about the only white person. Everywhere I walk on the streets, I'm pretty much the only white person. There's a few places where it's not true, but it is something you don't notice until you notice. And it's like, huh, this is different. So it's a helpful book. Not just for me, but I'm assuming for a lot of people who listen to this too. So let's get into some of the specifics. What are some of the ways, both done intentionally and unintentionally, so people who are doing this maybe not out of malice, and some who are like a little bit more pointed, that cause those who are of the minority group, whatever that may be, in majority spaces to feel culturally distanced or lonely and unwelcome?
That's a good question. So I think so you asked like unintentional and intentional, and
Yeah,
I'm
those who are like not trying to be distancing, but kind of are by the questions and the things that they say, or and those who are trying to be distancing and unkind.
Yeah, so I think, when it comes to unintentional, I think I'll start with that one. So unintentional, I think there's something that we all have, and it's called unconscious bias. And an unconscious bias just means that there are parts of us that we might be feeling certain attitudes or prejudices or sentiments that we're just not necessarily aware of. And it's inherent in the name unconscious bias. We're just not conscious of it. And actually, we all have it. We all have some of this,
And it
even
could
though.
be good or it could be bad. It could be like good biases and bad biases.
Yeah, exactly. It could be good or bad. And so we're all walking around with it. We just aren't aware of it. And we need some external help to help us name and point what those are, the positive and the negative. So that's, I think, one of the unintentional things that happens in our society is we're not necessarily aware that we are having these feelings or attitudes, but we have them, and we all have them. And then there's, of course, the intentional, and we can, and I think we all know what some of those are. But I think we can also kind of define them also based on, for example, societal or structural, systemic sort of things that are intentional, like policies, for example. We can take a policy such as redlining, which happened, you know, in the earlier part
Which
of the
is why Senate, funnily enough, sorry to cut you off, but it's why Senate exists in the first place. It's because of redlining.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, perfect example right there. So what has happened is segregation right there in Santa Ana because of redlining.
Mm-hmm.
And it is because of those policies that was intentional. It was intentional because the redlining policy and
yep.
using that as an
all example, the wealthy cities kind of border us, and then we're like the quote unquote unwealthy city right in the middle.
Right. So, you know, and so that was intentional.
It
was
was,
intentional
yep.
to exclude certain groups from housing
Mm-hmm.
and living in certain areas. And so you were living right in the middle of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're living in the middle of an intentional policy. So, and then, but I think there's other layers too. I mean, there's, you know, we can look at our environments, our local communities, our local subcultures too, and kind of identify, okay, there's some intentional things and there's some unintentional things that are happening at these various layers.
Yeah. So let me ask you, and this is not an original questions that I asked you, because it was kind of a sub question for this one. But when people ask you, because you're walking around Alabama, and my assumption is you don't look like most of the people who are walking around in Alabama, nor the city that you walked in, and they walk up to you and they're curious, it's like, oh, she's probably not from here. And they ask you, hey, Presenta, where are you from?
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Yeah. So, you know, again, I think that question, and so where are you from? You know, there are ways of asking that, which are people are genuinely
Yeah,
curious
absolutely. Yep.
and want to know you. And then there's people who are asking, maybe they're just like, you're not from around here.
Yeah. And you
So,
say, oh, I'm from wherever,
yeah.
Alabama. I'm from Wisconsin. Then they ask you, well, where are you
really
really from?
Where are you really from? Yeah. So when people would ask me in Alabama, I'd say I'm from Alabama.
Yeah.
Because that was the
Yeah.
truth. That was my home.
Yep.
And so, and then people will say, no, where are you really from? Or they'll say, well, where are your parents from?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get like, they're trying to like figure out who you are and trying to put like some name or label, I don't know, label or something, trying to understand who you are. So, yeah, I get asked that question still, even, probably not as much as I used to, but
Sure.
still.
Yep. So, yeah, we talked about this pre-recording, and this is an issue, and you don't spend a ton of time in the book, but you do. There are some points in the book that you highlight this, where the evangelical church as a whole, more or less, depending on where you're at, but I mean, in general, is more or less dominantly white. And the culture that I inhabit and have my being, the Reformed culture, is almost entirely white, at least in America. If you go outside of America, if you go to Brazil or Nigeria, it's of course not obviously white. So focusing more on church culture, can you talk about your experience? There's a lot of statistics and experience of those who dwell in majority white spaces and how they might feel either isolated or marginalized and othered, and maybe more particularly so in the church.
Yeah, I think one thing I think that is important to remember is people of color, when they're entering in a white space, whether it's a church or some other space, first of all, they're all very different. There's so many, the wide range of ethnic minorities, each with a different experience, background, culture, language, religion. So they're all very unique. And so I think that's one thing to remember is that every one of them is coming in with that unique perspective and a unique background. But the other thing I want to mention is that they're bringing their own experiences of being an ethnic minority. So when they're coming into church, that person is coming in with that whole background with them. They're carrying their culture, and they're also carrying whatever trauma they may have experienced, you know, being a minority. They're bringing that with them into that church space. For example, you specifically mentioned church. So when they're coming into that space, they're bringing those feelings of being othered, perhaps. There is this feeling of what I call, well, it's not a term that I have coined,
sure.
but it's called a perpetual foreigner. So showing up into spaces where you are always consistently the minority, you tend to feel like you are constantly the foreigner. And you are trying to figure out how to navigate that space. You're trying to think about, you know, what parts of me are allowed here? What parts of me are not allowed here? And how can I be myself? So I think that people of color balance that whole question of how much do they show up as themselves and how much do they not, and risk, how much are they risking to do that? And so when you're showing up in a place of worship, you know, if you are in a congregation of, you know, one whole ethnic group, and then another person walks in, so that person is also coming in with their own cultural ideas about worship.
Yeah.
And how can we, for example, I can give you an example, like Asian Americans, for example, the wide variety of religions that Asian Americans come from, you know, there's Hinduism, Buddhism, there's Islam, and each of these worship differently. And so, for example, in India, you know, Asian Indians, the way they worship, it's more of a part of their lifestyle and how they live, as opposed to we go to church every Sunday and this is how the service is organized. You know, like in our US culture, we have a certain way of worship and going to church. But in other countries, it's not like that. It's a little different. And it could be different per person and per family. And so they're coming in with different ideas about what worship looks like. And so this is true for immigrants, but it's also true, you know, when my book is Ethnic Loneliness, and in one of the first chapters, I spend some time defining terms, like, what do I mean by Black? What do I mean by Asian? What do I mean by Latino? So it's a different also for the Black population. You know, what does it mean for them to show up in church? That means something different than a Latino person or an Asian person.
Yeah. So sometimes I try to channel what I assume, because we get questions after publishing the interview or from friends or honestly from myself. I can imagine someone saying, well, this is how we've always, whether it be the church, whether it be even business, whatever it may be. I can imagine someone saying, this is how we've always done it. This is just how it's done. And when they see something else or hear something else, like what you're saying, they was like, well, that's just not how it gets done. That's just not how we do it. This is how it's always been done. This is just how church goes. This is how this business runs. This is how this family runs. What might you say from a perspective that may not share that, to say, this is how we can engage in some of those conversations?
That is a very common response, right? This is how we've always done it. Why should we change? It's working, right? Is it working though? That's the question we can ask ourselves. Yeah, one of the things I think that I believe that we need is curiosity. So curiosity and asking questions and asking ourselves, is it about the way that we've done things, or is it, how does that person feel? Like, let's be curious and ask some questions. We're assuming that because this is the way we've always done it, it's working. But are we asking the question and asking that person, is this really working for you?
Or this is the way of doing it. This is where everybody else does it. So of course, why would everybody else not do it this way?
Yeah, right. So is it the only way? Like there are so many ways to worship, as we know. So, you know, I think part of it is just, you know, being curious and having some cultural maybe awareness or sensitivity to just thinking about these questions and asking these questions in our spaces and asking ourselves, how would I feel? Like you, Peter, have had that experience living in Santa Ana. So you
have an experience, but experience nonetheless.
You have a little bit of that experience, but you are aware, right? I think you are aware that this could be an issue for other people. Mm-hmm. So I think developing that sense of awareness, and how do we do that? I think one of the things that we can do is challenge ourselves into going into spaces that where we are different. So I, for one example that I can share is when I was in college, actually it was in graduate school, one of our teachers challenged us to do this. We were challenged as an assignment to choose an environment that we had never been to, and that we would be the only person like us. We would be like, we don't know what's going on. And so I ended up choosing to go to a Jewish synagogue. I had never been to a Jewish synagogue. Now imagine me in the Midwest going to a Jewish synagogue. I stood out.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yep.
No mistaking who was visiting that day.
Sure.
And interestingly, when I called and I was trying to figure out when do I show up in the services, and I listened to the message, and I just heard words. I didn't understand what I was hearing. I heard, I wrote down some times, and I said, I'm just going to show up. I ended up showing up at a bat mitzvah, and no idea what, you know, I had no idea that's what was happening. But it was super interesting because an elderly Jewish lady sat next to me, and she looked at me, and I said, is it obvious that I don't, you know, are people wondering why I'm here? And she said, oh, they probably think you're a Yemeni Jew. I said, oh, okay. Nobody made me, nobody like asked me to leave or anything, but I did see people looking my way, and maybe they thought I was a friend of the Jewish lady that was sitting next to me. So it kind of worked in my favor, but.
That's right. I like that. I like that example. And this, again, this is not, this will lead kind of into the next question, but as a bridge, and this might sound like an obvious question on the front end, but I want to ask this for our listeners and for those who might have the same experience as you, and for those who may not have the same experience as you, what's it like as an ethnic minority walking into a space that doesn't look like you, that doesn't sound like you, that doesn't do things like, what is it, for lack of a better way of asking this, what's it feel like walking into some of those spaces?
So I can speak for myself, and I think if you ask other people, they'll also share how they feel.
Absolutely.
The way that I feel, and what one of the ways that I talk about is this feeling of showing up fractured. So you're showing up not as your full and whole self. You're wondering whether you will be accepted, and you're wondering how much people are looking at you. There's always, so here's the thing, when I walk into a room, and I've talked to other people of color who say this, when I walk into a room, one of the first things I am noticing is there any other person of color in this room?
That's exactly what my wife thinks.
Exactly.
100%.
I'm counting, I'm looking, and I'm gauging whether I'm the only one and how many of us are there and where they are, right?
And it's not a question, to be honest, that I ask myself all that often, but it is a question my wife asks herself a lot.
Exactly. And we are constantly asking ourselves that. We are constantly aware. We are aware of that. Whereas I guess white folks, they don't have that feeling of like, like you said, you don't have to ask yourself that question.
No.
But we're asking ourselves like, how many of us are in this room? That's one of the first things I think about. And then I have to think about, there's this whole mental thing going on in your head. And you're not even always aware of it because it's so like common and automatic now. You're like, you're thinking, okay, like how much do I, what do I say? How do I show up? I've even thought like, sometimes if I'm in a new place and I have to put my name tag on, do I use my real name? I used to wonder, should I use my real name? Should I use an American nickname to make it easier for everyone else? So those are questions you don't like, Peter.
Yeah, I've never thought about that from Peter.
Did you ever change your name, Peter?
No. I've only ever heard it mispronounced once, which is beyond me. But I've never thought of doing that.
Never had to change your name, right?
No.
So those are some things that I guess are unique, and it's like feeling in limbo, right? We're kind of like, we're navigating, we're there's like this not quite feeling of being fully settled, and we're wondering what's going to happen, what might someone say to me, right? What is the state of belonging going to be? Like, that's a deeper question. What is the state of belonging going to be for me here in this space?
Yeah, that's good. That's the reason why I asked that. I was hoping you were, I was assuming you're going to say, because I read your book, so I was assuming you're going to say something close to that, which is a perfect bridge into this next question. You talk about, and you can maybe define what you just said as like you're an exile. It's you don't quite fit into a specific people group that you're walking into. And I think in your case too, with your background, it's both ethnically and religiously. So it's often feeling unwelcome, and others the only or one of the few brown people in places you inhabit in America, and also being too cultured. And you talk about this in your book, which I had never thought about until I read this, that you're like too American when you walk around and you visit in India. And so can you talk a little bit what it's like to like, I'm Indian, but I don't quite fit in India, an American, I don't quite fit in America. What's that like to feel like you don't really belong in either place?
Yeah. I grew up feeling like, you know, like mismatched. So one of the stories I like to share is when I was a little kid, I used to play this matching game where you had these cards and they would be turned face down and you would have to flip the cards over and match the cards. Mm-hmm. And I always felt like I mismatched. Like I don't fit here because people in America look at me and they don't know if I can speak English. They don't know sometimes what I am or
Sure.
who I am. They may not want to start a conversation with me because they don't know.
Yeah.
And then in India, for sure, I don't fit in because I don't speak the language.
Huh.
And I would go there and I would not fit in at all culturally because I wouldn't know. I don't know what the cultures are, what the practices are, how to behave. So my mom, I want to share a story.
Yeah,
I
do it, please.
We went to India 2 years ago. I went with my parents and my brother's family after many, many years for all of us to go together. And even for my parents, it had been, I want to say 17 years,
Dang.
Which is a really long time.
I imagine, yeah.
To go without seeing their family. So we went together and we were in New Delhi. And my mother, she had never been to the Taj Mahal. So she wanted to see the Taj Mahal.
Gotta
so we
see
made
it. Yep.
plans to go and we were there getting our tickets. And so the ticket guy said, well, are you Indian? And we said, yes, we're Indian. And he said, show us your passports. And so we pulled out passports and they're American passports. And he said, nope, you're not Indian. You have to pay the tourist prices. So we had to pay the tourist prices. And my mom, it was interesting. She said to me, huh, we're like foreigners and I'm a foreigner in my own country.
Yeah.
But she said, and she said, and even in the US, I'm also kind of a foreigner. So it was just this super interesting interaction and response because, yeah, you don't think about that. And
No.
So you're in this liminal space. And I think too, like, I think when I was growing up in the South, there was nobody else like me, like no other Indian American like me. There are now, because my parents were among the first wave of immigrants from Asia, especially India, that came in 1965. The United States passed the Immigration Act.
Yep.
And so my parents were in that first wave of people. That
same thing happened in Orange County in the 70s, specifically in Irvine, which is like, I hate using the stereotype, but it's like, it's true in Irvine. It's very tech heavy. And so they got a lot of tech immigration in the 70s from India specifically. Yeah.
So you saw that happening in Irvine. Well,
yep.
Not many people were flocking to rural Alabama.
No.
I don't know what drew us there, but we ended up there and beautiful weather, you know, beautiful state, so green and pretty, but no other Indian people. So. So that was also part of it, is where you grow up, you know, in Irvine, it would have been different. I would have had pals like me, but
That's
not,
right.
not in rural India, not in rural Alabama.
Totally. Yeah. This is going to be sort of an off the wall question, and I hope it's not intrusive at all. But when you start talking to somebody, does anybody like expect an accent and like, oh, you quote unquote speak normal?
Well, I can tell you this, that's happened before, because I have had people say to me, wow, you speak really good English.
Yeah, like you don't speak like Indian accent and there's no Southern accent from what people can hear. I'm just curious if people are like, oh, when you open your mouth, I was like, oh, that's not what I was expecting.
Well, I will tell you this really funny story. Again, I have a good story for you.
Yeah, I love this. Yep.
Growing up in Alabama, I actually had a Southern accent. It was not strong. But it was most definitely a Southern accent.
Was this intentional or just like kind of seeped into you?
No, it just kind of like I absorbed it, just
Okay.
being there, growing up and going to school there. And so when I moved to the Midwest and in my 20s, and I started opening my mouth and I started talking, people would start laughing. They would just laugh at me. And I actually make that joke in the book. I say, you know, if it was that easy to make people laugh, I would have been a comedian because it
That's
was that
right. Yep.
easy to people laugh.
Yep.
I open my mouth. You're not expecting an Indian girl to speak Southern. So
No. Yeah.
it just kind of flew, like, you know, people were not like, they were just like, what? What? So that was something really funny that happened to me. And boy, did I actually try to get rid of that accent fast.
Yeah. And this is a completely random question. And this is per have you ever heard of the podcast Armchair Expert?
I have not.
Okay, with Dax Shepard and Monica Padman. Monica Padman is an Indian American. She lived in Alabama, and her story is remarkably similar to yours. And I was listening to their show today, and she talked about her exile status from being, I don't, she was born in Georgia. But she's talked about like I was born in Georgia, but my parents were born in India, and then when I was in here, nobody accepted me. And this, I feel like you would like listen to her and listen to that show too. Just you guys share a lot of similar background stuff. That's just
Yeah, I made a note of that. I'm going to take a listen. Sounds
cool.
good.
So, next questions. Having friends who don't share your same skin color, your ethnicity, or cultural backgrounds. We've talked about some of the stuff that can be bad about it, or that can be uncomfortable and lonely, but it can also be a tremendous education in itself. We've kind of touched this topic, but I want to dig a little bit deeper. What both because they can point out cultural blind spots that you might never have noticed before, and they live that exilic life, which is, to be honest, about as pinpointy scriptural as you can get for who we are as Christians in general. So can you talk about some of this stuff?
Sure. So, yeah, I think one thing you just said was they can point out blind spots in us. You know, we talked earlier about unconscious bias, but having friends of so many, I think it just almost goes without saying, I feel like, but having a diverse group of friends is so enriching. You know,
Yeah.
you learn different perspectives, and it's such a learning, rich learning experience on so many levels. Creativity, you know, synergy. And honestly, when we talk about a minority, we have to also mention that by 2045, the US is going to be a non-white majority. So it means that we're shifting demographically. So it but it doesn't mean that, you know, all of our issues are going to go away.
No.
It's not going to change automatically, but we're going to be seeing more and more of this. I think we're going to have more and more of these conversations and be willing to kind of bridge the ethnic and cultural gaps by reaching out to our neighbors who are from different countries and backgrounds and different races and ethnicities than us. So I think our world is going to have to move that way because we're shifting. And so in order to understand each other, we have to spend time with each other and talk to each other, you know?
Yeah, and then what about the exile status too that you talk about? This is more towards the end of the book, where the like you said, the liminal space that you inhabit that I'm assuming that a lot of minorities inhabit too, which is not the same liminal space as somebody who comes from my background may inhabit. What does that teach us about what scripture says pretty plainly is that all Christians are exiles, not just the minorities.
Yeah, and of course we all in that sense, we as Christians are living in exile, living in a state of exile. And so we should have, like, you would that is kind of like a starting point, I think, to understanding exile and then what it means to be reconciled. You know, it's not just that we live in exile, but we have also experienced reconciliation and we experience belonging from God. So how we should be the first. Like, how can we extend that invitation of reconciliation and belonging to all people? Because that invitation is there for everybody. And so we have that experience. So how can we extend that to others?
That's good. So later in part two, and this is kind of summarizing part two, like the last third of the book-ish, you chart a path. This is not just all that's wrong with loneliness and woe is you, America, and everybody. This is what do we do now? What do we do with this? And I don't remember if you said this or this is me summarizing it, but not ethnic. It's not just like blend all the ethnicities together and make them one. It's no, we have our distinctives, but they're like a beautiful mosaic with one another. They're distinct, but they're also, let's unify around all this where all people, you talk about this quite a bit. I love this. This is from Revelation 7. Every tribe, tongue, people, nation come together without losing their distinctiveness of who they are. So what are some of the steps that you talk about in this book towards mm-hmm. where we don't lose the distinctions between our ethnic backgrounds, ethnic identities, but we also we unify around who we are under Christ, or I guess in general, just as humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That picture is, you know, a picture of, like you said, we don't lose our identities, but we are still unified. I think I'm going to give like three steps maybe, and this
Please,
is
yeah.
not, this is maybe simplified, and we can talk in more
detail. There's a whole lot more. If people want more, read the book.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say one of the first things that was good for me, that was helpful for me, was healing and reclaiming. So it was for me personally, because I had to go through steps of healing and reclaiming my ethnic identity. I had to go through this journey of spiritual healing too. Like, this is how God made me, mm-hmm. but I was not, I wanted to be white. That's what I wanted when I was young. And so I had to go through that whole experience of accepting and reclaiming and healing from all of that. And so that was number one for me, was I think that there are many of us who have to kind of deal with that and address that and accept it and rejoice in it and believe it, and you know that it's a good thing.
I think, right? At some point in the book you talk about your hair is like, let's just not, it doesn't move the way, or it doesn't like lay the way that some of the white girls moves, and like I really wanted to change that, but
yeah exactly. Yeah. So those parts of our identity that everything, like, you know, that we don't like, but everything is redeemed by God. So it's anyway, just healing in our identity and reclaiming that. And then the other thing I would say is sharing our stories. And this is a kind of a two-way street.
Yeah.
So for the ethnic minorities to share, to talk, to share. But there is the caveat I want to share with that is that to be safe, like there is a risk. There is a risk to speaking up. There's a cost to speaking up. There's a cost to being silent. So we as ethnic minorities are navigating that and trying to make decisions about that cost. Do we speak up or do we be silent and sharing our story? The other side of sharing our story is that we need someone to listen to the story. You know, we need places to share the story. We need platform. We need opportunity to share our stories. So that's number two. And I guess, you know, number three would be just remaining safe and soft and not letting the world harden you. But how can you be soft and remain safe but soft?
That's good. Yeah. And maybe I'm channeling, not because I'm a minority, I'm channeling because I've heard this from my wife or from other people before. We're like, what about those who are like, I just feel kind of like the token black person in this area, or the token Mexican. Whenever anything comes up, like I'm the person they talk to about. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could talk to them. It's like, this is exactly towards your last point. Like the jade is like, I have no other choice but to be this person here. How do I navigate this space amongst those who, like, I'm the person they go to for this?
Right. And that's very common. You know, as ethnic minorities, we are constantly, so I think that we straddle being invisible and then hyper-visible.
Yeah.
So, you know, and so all of a sudden we're visible, and they want us to speak to this issue because maybe for optics, mm-hmm. for tokenism, for, you know, and then, but then when it comes to making systemic changes or whatever, then all of a sudden it's invisibility again. So it's really tough. It's a tough place to be. And
Yeah.
we're constantly straddling and navigating that.
Yeah, I don't envy that whatsoever, but it is something that yeah, we have to work through together. So to conclude this, we've covered a ton of ground, and there's so much more in this book that I very much encourage people to pick this up and read this. Both if this is something that kind of matches your story, I mean, of course, pick this up. And if this is something that doesn't match your story, pick this up. And that brings me to this last. What's your hope for those who read this, both those who are part of majority culture, like myself, and those who are minority culture who inhabit the same space, albeit, like you said, with different stories, different occurrences, whatever it may be, for speak to both people, again, generalization, who might pick up this book for what you hope that they get from it.
I'll speak to say the minority reader first. So for the minority reader, I really hope that they get a sense of celebrating who they are, and that they realize their sense of belonging and where that comes from, and that they can find that, and that they don't have to apologize, that they find that place of belonging. They don't have to apologize for who they are, and they can show up for themselves. That's my hope. And that they really experience belonging. And for both of us, like for the majority reader, I hope that this book gives people a sense of what it really feels like to be in another person's shoes, like trying to give language and define that experience and at a deeper level, and also just like what can we do about it? And I guess for both groups, I'll say this for both groups, because we're all lonely. We
Big
all
time.
are
Yeah.
lonely.
Yeah.
And I think that loneliness is kind of like, that's quote by C.S. Lewis about pain is like a megaphone, right? I think loneliness is a megaphone, and it's screaming right now in our culture. And I hope that loneliness is that megaphone sound coming through, telling us that we need to go back to each other, that we belong, to each other. And we need each other. We need community. And that living fractured in the ways that we are is not healthy. It's not working. It's not right. And that, we can find ways to get back to each other.
Yeah, and maybe too, if I can talk to people who look like me and think like me, whenever I've said it or present has said it too, it's when cultural blind spots are pointed out, it's not always or necessarily just for like, oh, this is horrible. Why do you do this stuff? It's just you don't notice it until you notice it, whether it's good or bad, whether it's kind of a bad blind spot or like, oh, this is just different than what everybody else does. Because that's something I fear that kind of majority culture thinks. It's when these kind of conversations come up, it's always like the worst aspects of the culture are pointed out, and this is what's got to change, which of course we have to do that. But that's not the entire conversation. Like you said, there's the beauty in the culture, and those are the things we want to point out too as well. Because I already know those who are listening, who are part of majority white culture. I already know if they've made it this far, some are fuming. It's like, why would you even talk about some of this stuff? Because to be honest, like I feel it myself at points where it's like, oh, this is hard. This is not something you want to talk about all the time. But like you said, this is it really does help. Yeah. Even though I personally will never go through some of this stuff, it really does help to read it from your eyes and to walk on your feet a little bit and others and say, how does she view the world? How does he view the world? Which doesn't say that what I see is wrong. It's just it's different, and we can talk to each other about this stuff.
And thank you for sharing your discomfort and with that, and how some viewers might respond with it. But I would like to challenge and push
Yeah.
that a little bit, because if we're feeling that, then I think we need to stop and examine that and why. There is what is the reason for that discomfort? And to examine that and go deeper and ask why. Why is this making me uncomfortable? Why? And so I think that there's value in spending time examining that question and not just pushing it away and saying, I'm not going to even look at that. I'm not going to listen to this or think about it. it's hard.
Yeah.
And we don't want to do it. It's hard work. But you know what? And I will say this, you know, we all are doing different kinds of hard work,
100%.
but the ethnic minority person around you is doing that hard work.
Oh yeah, all the time.
Without you thinking about
yep,
it.
Yep, yep.
So you have the privilege of saying, I'm not going to think about this.
Yep.
But they don't. They don't have that privilege. They have to think about it. So so anyway, I think I just yeah. I just want to encourage people to just press in a little bit and not run away from that and see what God might be wanting to say.
I like it.
About that. Cool.
Yeah, that's good. And that's a good note to end on. Well, thank you, Presenta, so much for making the time, for coming on, for writing this book, for people to read, to learn, to, like you said, think critically and talk to others and invite more into this discussion for those who either may not share the same experiences, for those who do share the same experiences, what all of our shared experiences are that unify this. Thank you so much for coming on the show, for writing the book, and I hope people pick up this book.
Peter, thank you so much for having me. It was delightful to be here with you. Thank you for your kind words about the book. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah. I like well-written books, and this is a well-written book. This is, I very much encourage people to pick this up.
Thank you so much.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed this week's book club episode where we spotlight a specific book from a publisher and an author that both Nick and I really enjoy. We don't always agree with everything that the author or the book comes about, but what they do share with us is love for Christ and his gospel from whatever tradition they come from, whatever creedal tradition they come from or confessional tradition. We all do share the same broader ecumenical Christian faith. From different backgrounds, ethnicities, and denominations. We hope that these introduce books that you might not have heard of before, authors that you might not have heard of before. I've been really helped by learning about some of these. If you want to go to our show notes, find a link to the publisher, that helps them out a ton. A link to the author's page, to the book, to purchase it from the publisher themselves. It really helps them expose their work through the publisher themselves.
Yeah, and the value that we're bringing with these book clubs is you guys can really rely on us because, as we all know, it takes a lot of time and effort to stay on top of all the books that are coming out and know which ones are probably good to look into, be recommended to read, look out for. And so these episodes are to whet your palate. We've already know that we're going to recommend this book, but you can listen to the episode yourself, get a little more understanding of the book and the author, and then go from there.
Yeah. So if you want to find these books and purchase one for yourself, purchase one for friends or family, and also too, if you can find us on Apple, Spotify, any podcast catcher, rate and review us. That's how we're best known. It's how we kind of make ourselves known. Introduce these to a friend and maybe just build your bookcase, build your reading, read broader and read really well, all under the umbrella of our creedal faith under Jesus Christ.